Friends of the Lake Bemidji State Park have a pancake breakfast on Sunday from 8 to 10 at the park's dining hall. And then Native American Music and Arts Festival is Sunday. It's at Mille Lacs Indian Museum and Trading Post from 10 to 5 near Onamia.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 in Brainerd. And on your smart speaker, we are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Going on today, the Central Lakes College Ag and Energy Research Center has its annual field day. It's from 9 to 3 at their site in Staples, a day of hands-on demonstrations, education sessions, local food, and more. You can find a schedule at clcagandenergy.org/events. Coming up, we'll have local news with the Up North Report. Don't forget, it is Labor Day weekend. Get your tickets. Next weekend is Grand Rapids River Fest. John, how do you explain your experiences at Grand Rapids River
Fest? Well, it's big time. That's what I can say. We used to have the little festivals here. They were small, intimate. You know, you might have 200 people. This is big time. Mm-hmm. TV screens, vendors, people having fun. And the music, of course, is extraordinary. The view is fantastic.
Some new things this year. I heard from Kari yesterday. There's some trivia going on in the KEXE booth. Fire in the Village is going to be here making some art on the Riverwalk. There's also, what else is going on? There's some other things. There's our board of directors is doing a little fundraiser. It's going to be a lot of fun. John and I will both be there. We hope you will as well. Look for us. We'd love to meet you.
Yeah, introduce yourself.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. A shooting at a home Thursday in rural Cass Lake resulted in serious injuries for a 40-year-old Cass Lake man. At 2:14 a.m., the Cass County Sheriff's Office received a 911 call at a residence in the Prescott housing area in Wilkinson Township. Deputies and responders arrived at the residence and learned that an unknown man entered the home and shot an occupant before fleeing the scene. The victim was transported to Sanford Health Bemidji with serious injuries. The incident remains under investigation with the assistance of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. An autopsy of the 59-year-old Cass Lake woman who crashed a pontoon Tuesday in Leech Lake showed she suffered a medical emergency before the crash. The Cass County Sheriff's Office also identified the victim as Teresa K. Ciccini on Thursday. The sheriff's office received a report of a boat crashing into the rocks and shoreline near Walker City Park. Responders found Ciccini unresponsive, and she was later pronounced dead after being transported to the Walker Airport. As Minnesotans mourn those killed in Wednesday's mass shooting, public frustration is mounting over the frequency of these attacks in the United States. Local researchers recommend a comprehensive and compassionate way of spotting warning signs and responding to them. The deadly attack on students at a Minneapolis Catholic school has again brought gun violence back into the spotlight. At Minnesota's Hamline University, James Densley is with the Violence Prevention Project Research Center. His team's recent findings say those who carry out school shootings are often in a noticeable crisis, meaning students, staff, and parents should be trained to recognize concerning behavior and how to report it.
So a lot of this is really around communication, that people trust in the systems that are going to get people off of that pathway to violence so that they don't go looking for answers in the darkest corners of the internet.
He says speaking up shouldn't lead to punishment for the person in question, but rather accessible and affordable forms of care. The center also says mass shooters have significant trauma histories, and researchers recommend a more thorough screening of childhood trauma as kids grow up. Densley acknowledges challenges such as peers not wanting to be seen as snitches for reporting someone. Densley says they've interviewed people who've carried out mass shootings along with those who had their attack plans thwarted. For situations where a tragedy was avoided, he says there was a common factor that served as a blockade.
Many times it was a human intervention. It was an act of kindness that gave them hope and a reason to live. Time and time again, it was that human connection that really made the difference.
As for warning signs in someone they know, he says people should be mindful of dramatic changes in behavior that include aggression or an unexpected flurry of social media posts centered around grievances. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. An Itasca County voter fraud case may head to a jury trial in October after a judge rejected the defendant's guilty plea on Monday. Megan Buffington has more.
40-year-old Danielle Miller of rural Nashwauk was charged with three felony counts of absentee voter fraud last October. She allegedly attempted to vote for Donald Trump on behalf of her dead mother. Miller initially pleaded not guilty, but petitioned to enter a guilty plea last week. She would have pleaded guilty to one of the three counts, with the other two dismissed as part of the plea deal. Miller would have received 3 years of supervised probation, in addition to several other requirements, including reading a book about voting in America and writing a 10-page paper on, quote, the importance of voting in a democracy and how election fraud can undermine the voting process. A judge rejected Miller's plea at her hearing Monday. Itasca County Attorney Jacob Botchold says Miller told the judge she was intoxicated and that her sister mailed the ballots, which he says is not what the investigation suggests. Minnesota statute requires defendants to state the factual basis of their plea before a judge can accept it to ensure the defendant knows what they are pleading guilty to. A jury trial is scheduled for October 20th, but Fotold expects another attempt at a guilty plea to take place sooner. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
Coming up, we'll have more news, this time from Morning Edition and National Public Radio. And we're learning about next, John Bauer, a high school in Wichita, Kansas, that didn't have enough players to field a football team, so it planned alternative evening activities for students.
Oh, instead of football?
Yeah. They didn't have enough. Yeah. And then on our story core, we're learning about, we've got a conversation with Fancy Clancy. He's a vendor who's been selling beer at Baltimore Orioles games since 1974.
Wow.
Fancy Clancy.
Wow.
Think about, I mean, this guy's life, but what he has meant to Baltimore Oriole fans.
No kidding.
You know, if you think, it's almost like going to a Lynx game now and seeing Courtney Williams' dad.
Yeah. So Minnesota Twins used to have Wally the Beer Man.
Oh, yeah.
They used to have Wally the Beer Man.
He was in ads and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Forgot.
Just that's what they did their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a couple things I'd like to share with you.
Okay.
One was yesterday I took my grandkids school shopping. Okay. Not clothes.
School supplies.
Like crayons.
Okay.
Pencils.
And you had like a list of what you needed?
Kim wipes.
Did you have a list?
Yes.
Okay.
But it was useless because you can't find it. These stores, these big box stores have sections, but it's absolute chaos. Boxes are empty. I couldn't find this one kind of, you know, there's like, they want 19 different Crayolas. Thin ones, you know, this one, black ones. It was pretty stressful. And so...
How were the granddaughters?
Oh, they're just standing around. They're looking at stuff. You know, they're not paying attention. They don't care what color pencils. I'm the one in charge. So there was a lady with her older kids, and I said, "Is this as rough as it is for me?" She goes, "This is crazy." So it was really nuts.
Yeah. You didn't get everything?
I got more than they needed, and twice as much.
Aww.
Like I'm shoving it down the school district's face. These kids are going to be taken care of.
All right.
They can give pencils to people. They can give Crayolas to people. You know, sharpeners. Pencils must be sharpened that you buy them sharpened. So there's like 40 different pencils. And there's only one that is pre-sharpened.
Why?
I have no idea. That's the thing.
Couldn't you buy none?
No.
And how about a pencil box?
Pencil box. Yeah. Clear pencil box. You know. And then... You have to have, you know, the wipes, sanitary wipes. You have to have Kleenexes. You have just all this stuff that was just so unusual to me. Like, but it was bedlam. The section is bedlam because people buy stuff or they grab stuff and it's not the right thing and they throw it in the wrong box. So it's like a grab bag. It was very stressful.
So when you grab the wrong stuff, did you put it back where it's supposed to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
What
it's
about
like
that? I mean,
shopping cart.
in a store? Do you do that in a like grocery shop?
I've set something down.
Yeah.
In the same department.
Feel guilty.
Yeah, like maybe a box of cookies or something. They're the wrong kind. I set them there.
I would never do the horrible thing of like some milk in
gosh.
The dry goods section.
Oh, no.
Every once in a while, though, you see someone doing
that. That's evil. That's evil. And the golf cart, the shopping cart thing's rude, too, because you're on full display. You can't be doing that. You can't. I was at a store the other day, and someone put it, like, in the middle of the parking lot. Like, did they park 5 miles away?
Brenda wants to know, John, what the chem wipes are used for.
Well, I don't know if it's chem wipes, but, you know, the...
Just the sanitary wipes,
you know, not chem wipes. Chem wipes goes back quite a few years. Yeah. I don't think they make them anymore.
Is it chem wipes?
I swear they were called chem wipes.
That's what she wrote, but I thought maybe she mistyped it.
No, that
I have no idea what chem wipes are. I thought she meant chem, like it was, you know, the chemicals in there or something.
So that
do you remember with your kids doing any school shopping?
Absolutely no memory of it. Okay. Zero.
Okay.
Isn't that amazing? Zero. Maybe they didn't have to. Maybe they just got clothes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They could have gotten backpacks, but I don't remember having to get, you know, 27 pencils, number 2.3. Lead already sharpened. God, I did get them a pencil sharpener though, a little one, you know.
Nice.
And then here's another thing that's
okay.
No,
wait
no.
on me.
Well, what's it called when they like Sonia buys tea? She buys these box of tea that she loves. All right.
Yeah.
It used to be 20. Now there's 18. And there's a name for that. We've been talking about that. Like cereals, the boxes are smaller and stuff like that. I just think
upselling,
yeah, something like that. But then here's the one that really set me over it. Now, please respond if you think I'm crazy or you agree with me. When I clean the bathrooms, I use Mr. Clean. It's kind of lime or a lemony smell, all right? And you take the cover off.
Shrinkflation.
It's very upsetting. They think we're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this Mr. Clean is like a Schmidt Big Mouth used to be a beer that had an opening about this big.
Yeah.
So you cannot pour a tiny amount. And I think that's just cleverness on their part. You use the product faster.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, it's like, I guess unless you're like trying to pour nitroglycerin into a shot glass, but you just tip it and it pours out. So those are things that I feel angry about. Like they're taking advantage of us. But maybe that's how you get rich and that's how businesses work. Oh. A little trickery.
We heard from Old Man River who says in the 1960s, this is about the favorite books of childhood. Kind of related here. He said, I got hooked on reading all 21 Hardy Boy hardcover mysteries by Franklin Dixon, a pen name for Canadian journalist and filmmaker Leslie McFarlane. Eventually, I moved to more serious literature, and the only American author I have read over and over is John Steinbeck, especially his character-driven novels Cannery Row and Sweet Thursday, so much so that I visited the setting in California twice. His memoir, Travels with Charlie, sent me on a similar, with a friend on a similar adventure the summer of 2019. Happy Labor Day.
Mm.
Wow, that is somebody who loves to read.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's something else. grinds my gears. We got a little gif, whatever you call it, from Kari.
Yeah.
Because it grinds your gears to be shrinkflation.
Yeah, they just think we're silly. It's just embarrassing. So if you have an example of how you're getting drilled or you're sort of a detective on shrinkflation, tell us what's been getting after you as of late. Text us. 218-326-123. Of course, it's everywhere. Toothpaste, everything.
I know.
I'll stop. We would like to thank the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, open Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8 to 1 at the intersection of Golf Course Road and Pacagama Avenue, offering an EBT double match and many more programs bringing produce to members of our community. More at grfarmersmarket.org.
More from National Public Radio up next, including a football team that didn't have enough players, mm-hmm. and a beer man, and we'll be bringing you the Border News Roundup with Marshall Helmberger.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. A high school in Kansas is trading in the typical Friday night lights for something different this year. NPR's Ben Abrams has the story.
This is what Wichita Independent High School's football field used to sound like on Friday nights. But this year, Panther Field will sound much different. After the end of the 2024 football season, the school realized they had a problem.
We started looking at how many players we might actually be able to field, and it became increasingly obvious that we were not going to be able to have enough to have a team.
That's Paul Drzezinski, the head of Wichita Independent School, and they needed at least 15 to 20 students for this season, but not enough of them signed up.
It was a very sad decision to have to make. And we were really worried about what will it do to morale? What will it do to the life of the high school?
Wichita Independent is a K-12 school with less than 400 students, and only 76 of them are in high school. For senior class president Jack Rowe, it was about much more than losing any game.
As a senior, football, Friday Night Lights, it's a major part of any school year. The senior class has a lot of band members and a lot of cheerleaders, and without football, they wouldn't have anything to do this fall.
Rowe worked with junior class president Ben Sackett to find a way to fill those Friday nights.
It was kind of immediately just like, how can we preserve all of these great things about football, even if it can't be actual football?
And Panther Night Lights was born. Instead of football games every week, the school will host a series of games and activities for students, faculty, and the community to participate in.
Things like slip and slide kickball, for example, which I think are not only fun to play, but are going to be really funny and entertaining to watch, are going to be some of the best activities we can possibly have.
Wichita Independent School's situation is not unique. A 2024 report from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says the number of school-age kids playing sports dropped by roughly 5% between 2017 and 2022. The report says barriers to kids playing sports include time constraints and social pressure. For rural communities in particular, the decline has to do with access to facilities, programs, and opportunities, says David Jevoltowski with the University of Nebraska College of Public Health.
The rural issue versus urban issue really is more subtle in the sense of what does that community offer? What are the opportunities? And then given those opportunities, is there incentives for kids to participate or not?
In the last few years, Jevoltowski observed a trend in rural communities where sports are really an option only for kids whose families can afford it in money and time.
But your typical child who just wants to participate for recreation reasons is probably not getting the opportunities or the pathway to get more involved.
Back at Wichita Independent School, Jack Rose says he's ecstatic that Panther Night Lights will be available to everyone.
I think what I'm most excited for is the opportunity for these kids that aren't really the best at like big sports like football or basketball to be able to go under the Panther Night Lights and compete in a friendly and competitive way, and the opportunity and joy that it'll bring them.
Rose says he's excited to make new, different memories under the Friday Night Lights. Ben Abrams, NPR News.
Time now for StoryCorps. For 50 years, this voice has been a constant at Baltimore Orioles home games.
Beerman, Beerman, you might need a brew. Hey, Beerman, Beerman, you might need a beer.
Clarence Haskett, also known as Fancy Clancy, has been a vendor at Orioles games since 1974. Haskett came to StoryCorps with fellow beer vendor Jerry Collier to remember how it all began.
My very first day, I was still in high school, and I don't know why I remember this, but I made $8.25.
I met you probably the second day of my new job where I was a beer vendor when I was 19 years old, and you just crushed it. When I looked around the ballpark, there was this ray of sunshine everywhere you look, a guy who outworked people, who outloved all the customers more than anybody else, and I said, that's who I want to be like.
But see, I had little secrets, though. I used to move quicker than a lot of the other vendors because I was a sprinter in college. And another thing, you know, I had the gift of gab, and I used to do rhymes, so that helped me out.
Give me one of your rhymes.
Well, back in the old days, I used to use this one a lot. Hey, empty your pockets, put your money in your hand, because here's Clancy, your beer man. So, you know, I used to do little things like that. And all the vendors that we work with, all of us had some type of a personality for doing something.
And if you go into the stadium and you're number one, you have incredible pressure to be a selling machine.
In the way that I look at my job as a vendor, my mindset is I'm a professional athlete. I have to stay in shape. I have to train during the off season because vendors running around with straps around their neck, that's only on television commercials. Good vendors pick up their case and they carry it.
It's consuming.
Yeah.
What's in your soul? Put it this way. Both of us, when it came to our wedding, how did we plan our wedding?
Around the Oreo
skin.
The world
out of town.
Yep.
You know, Clancy, you epitomize to me and so many people all that's right in the world. If it's a rain out the Oreo game and you only sell two cases of beer, in the big scheme of life, that's not a problem. And I think that's more than the rhymes and all the rest. You're larger than life in a lot of ways.
I can always go somewhere and get a free beer from somebody. I can go in a restaurant or a bar that I've never been in before. It's always somebody knew who I was. So I definitely shake a lot of hands. And as long as I'm still healthy, I know I got another good 10 years.
Clarence Haskett with his friend and fellow beer vendor Jerry Collier in Baltimore. Fancy Clancy is working his 51st season with the Orioles. Their interview will be archived at the Library of Congress.
Major support for StoryCorps comes from Subaru, who, along with its retailers, is partnering with AdoptAClassroom.org to provide funding to high-need schools and local communities for the Subaru Loves Learning Initiative. Subaru, more than a car company. And from Dignity Memorial. For many families, remembering loved ones means honoring the details that made them unique. Dignity Memorial is dedicated to compassion in every detail of a life celebration. DignityMemorial.com.
This is NPR News.
Join us for the 5th annual Grand Rapids River Fest, Saturday, September 6th, presented by KAXE, the City of Grand Rapids, and sponsored by Grand Rapids State Bank. The lineup features Courtney Barnett, Margot Price, Jeremy Albino, and Alan Sparhawk. Come along for a day of great music along the banks of the Mississippi River. Tickets available now at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com.
Coming up next, we'll be bringing you the Border News Roundup. It is 7:22, and this is the Friday Morning Show.
We would like to thank the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative offering workshops in September, preparing for fall colors, a two-session photography workshop September 13th and 20th at Itasca State Park, and Oils Made Easy September 24th through the 26th in Park Rapids. More at BagleyArts.org or on Facebook. We also want to thank Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji. Huff's congregation strives to build bridges with the community and welcomes all to seek truth, practice love, and celebrate life. More at headwatersuu.org.
Seeing some light rain in Brainerd, 58 degrees, showers in the vicinity in Aiken at 50, mist in Bemidji, 59, 51 in Grand Rapids right now, mostly cloudy in Hibbing at 50 degrees, and Park Rapids is reporting, let's see here, 60 degrees and some rain. Let us know what the weather's like where you are. Be our weather watcher. You can text 218-326-1234. We were talking about shrinkflation and John's ire over, you know, how they sell you smaller things for the same price. There's now, instead of 20 tea bags,
yeah, you get 18.
Bill from Big Lake says the worst shrinkflation is Halloween candy.
There yeah, you go. For sure.
Coming up next, it'll be Marshall Helmberger in at about 8:10 or so, or 8, you know, something like that. We'll be talking with the guys and the gals about sports on the sports page. If you want to weigh in on anything, you can text 218-326-1234. In It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and the publisher of the Timber Jay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall is back from us, coming off a trip to the Boundary Waters. Thanks for being here.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Let's start off with a conversation about an outage near Orr of internet and phone. And this is not just like a few hours. It was much longer than that.
Yeah, it was about 6 days for folks, and it affected a number of businesses as well as residences in the area. And the sad thing was, this was an entirely preventable outage. This ended up phone internet line cut during a replacement of culverts along a roadway. This is a county road, and you know, this contract had been let months ago. And the contractors, which were a local contractor, KGM, out of Angora, you know, they had been in contact with Frontier Communications months earlier and had been in regular, you know, contact with them, letting them know about, you know, the timing. They needed to get this work done before school started because, you know, this is blocked when they're replacing these culverts. This road is blocked, and it makes for a very significant detour for folks or school buses, you know, trying to pick up kids along this route. So they wanted to get this done. They were under this you know, deadline. And they'd been telling Frontier, you know, for a long time, we're going to be coming through here. And, you know, the folks from Frontier had told them, well, we think the line's deep enough that you won't run into a problem. But if you do, then we'll have somebody there right away. We'll make sure that we're ready to come and fix it. So any outage is very short. Well, turns out the line wasn't buried as deep as Frontier thought. So when they replaced one of these culverts, the line was cut. And it turns out that no, Frontier did not have a team in place ready to come and repair that line. In fact, it took them 6 days. So, you know, people without phone or internet, you know, for almost a whole week. And I know I talked to some business people who were definitely having problems with this, including a bear guide in the area who has, you know, a guiding service. And he was, you know, this was just ahead of the bear season, and he had all kinds of clients who were trying to get in touch with him, and nobody could get through to him. And you know, that was causing a problem for him and his clients. And he said when they finally did get it connected, he said he had phone call after phone call from people, you know, trying to make final arrangements. So, yeah, definitely a frustrating situation for folks up there. And it was interesting because, you know, we contacted St. Louis County because this was a county contract. And the county actually released emails to us because they had been CC'd on the communications between the local contractor and Frontier. And so you could see very clearly that the contractor had been doing its due diligence to try to ensure that, you know, there wasn't, you know, a cut or interruption in service for people. I mean, you know, because who's the first person who gets blamed? You know, it's the contractor who cuts the line. They're the ones who are going to, you know, fingers are going to point to. And so they wanted to make sure that that didn't happen. And but then once we were able to review all these emails, it was pretty clear that the fault lie with Frontier here, and they just didn't do the follow through that they, you know, had said they would.
All right. Let's move on to another story. This is something we've talked about for years and years, but something's new on this front. And that has to do with sulfates and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency having to do with mining companies. What's new in this?
Well, what's new is, you know, of course, the MPCA has really finally come out and started to enforce the so-called wild rice standard. This is this strict standard on sulfate discharges, which is has been enacted only in Minnesota. And it was dates back from the 70s as a means of protecting wild rice. And of course, Minnesota's, you know, the home to the most of the wild rice that grows in North America. You know, it's kind of an iconic Minnesota grain, and so there's obviously interest in protecting it. And of course, it's very important to the Anishinaabe, and so there's a lot of focus on that. And they'd actually been, a number of tribes in northern Minnesota had been pushing for years for the MPCA to start enforcing this because they were concerned about the decline in wild rice throughout the region. But particularly in areas that were impacted by mining discharges. And, so the MPCA, after a number of, some legal pressure, finally started doing some, serious enforcement of this. But it's created a lot of consternation in the taconite industry. And I think it was the Keetac facility and the new permit there, which is limiting their discharges at least at one location to like 14 milligrams per liter of sulfate. And the mining industry is very concerned now that this is going to be enforced throughout the sector, and that's going to require them to engage in expensive cleanup. But one of the ways that they're, really trying to, I think, pressure the MPCA is by, talking to local communities, elected officials, mayors around the Iron Range, and talking to them about that they're going to be impacted if this enforcement continues. And so there's a push to try to get the standard loosened down at the legislature. And there's going to be a hearing on this next Wednesday at September 3rd at the Iron Trail Visitors or Convention Center in Virginia, and the MPCA is going to be there to take testimony from the public on the sulfate standard and on the Keetac request for a variance. And there's going to be, I suspect, a lot of folks, especially a lot of local elected officials, who are going to be probably talking there. And making the case that they need to step back from this enforcement of this, both to protect jobs. They're suggesting that, some jobs could be lost at some of these area mines, or also that if this is enforced on communities, that this is going to affect their wastewater treatment plants, and that could, bankrupt the communities. And, that it's fairly unlikely, and it would be a lengthy process to get there. But it's certainly a possibility that there could be some communities that would need to do some treatment. And right now, the only known treatment for sure that's been commercially tested is reverse osmosis, which is quite expensive. There are some other technologies that have been tested as kind of a bench scale. The Natural Resources Research Institute has been involved in some of that. So there are some technologies that may be coming down the line that would be a lot more affordable to address the sulfate issue. But of course, this wouldn't impact every wastewater treatment facility, even if this is enforced at some point, because some don't discharge into wild rice waters. And if they're not, then they're not subject to the wild rice standard. And then others are already in compliance, like the one here in Tower. They've done some testing in the last year or so, and they found that for the most part, their discharges are below the standard. So they probably wouldn't require any additional treatment.
Did you want to add the additional story part there?
Sure.
Okay.
Yep. And then another related development, of course, is while we have the mining industry and some communities up here who are very concerned about enforcement, the fact that the MPCA is starting to enforce this has prompted the group Water Legacy, as a Duluth-based environmental group, and they had petitioned the federal EPA back in 2015 to take over essentially permitting of the mining industry here in Minnesota, because they argued that the MPCA was not complying with its own pollution standards. And that group has since now withdrawn that petition. They just did that this past week. and saying that they believe that now that the state is enforcing it, that petition is now not needed, and they don't want to have this withdrawn. They're also concerned that, you know, given the current state of the EPA here in Minnesota, or here federally with the Trump administration, they're concerned that there won't be the same level of concern or push for enforcement on the sulfate. So they would rather have the MPCA in charge of this issue rather than the EPA.
Before we let you go, Marshall, hunting season opening up on Monday, Labor Day.
That's right. And the bear season, it's hunters so far, I think, are cautiously optimistic, even though it's been a decent bear year, you know, and that's, you know, the natural food status is what really determines a lot of the success for hunters. You know, when you have a good natural food year, the bears aren't quite as responsive to the baits that hunters use to, you know, to bring bears into their near their stands. This year we've got, you know, decent foods, but then again, from what I'm hearing from talking to some bear guides and hunters, it sounds like they're seeing a lot of bear activity out there. They think there's good numbers of bears, and that makes sense because the DNR has been maintaining a relatively low harvest level the last several years, and so maybe we're starting to see some effect of that. So there do seem to be more bears around, and so even though it's a decent food year, you know, they're getting activity at their bait. So it usually suggests that it should be a good hunt. So we will see. It starts on Monday and runs through about the middle of October.
That is Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at their website. It's timberjay.com. Marshall, have a great weekend. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you. One step done and another begun, and I wonder how many miles I spent. I This is Courtney Barnett, our headliner for Grand Rapids River Fest, coming up a week from tomorrow, September 6th. It's Courtney Barnett with New Speedway Boogie.
Good song.
Can't you just see the stars are out?
Mm-hmm.
Banks of the Mississippi River. Day of fun, and this is what it caps off with.
Holding hands with your loved one, maybe shaking a little bit, like they're just dancing.
Sure.
Hands in the air, side to side.
7:39, it's Friday morning, and this is People Powered KAXE. Coming up next, we will have Best Wishes. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer, and we receive support from Cass Soil and Water Conservation District, offering the Managing Your Woodlands for Wildlife Workshop Saturday, September 6th, 9:30 to 11, the Walker Area Community Center. Registration available by texting the word woods to 218-833-2492.
Also want to thank Hot Tubs in Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
Time for best wishes. We wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Today is August 29th.
Tommy and Jana Vucetich celebrating their 50th anniversary.
Golden.
Heidi. There you go. From Hibbing. And Mary Miller, 73, from Bemidji.
For tomorrow, August 30th, Marshall Helmberger and Jody Summit celebrate 40 years of marriage from Tower. Tracy Hardy Johnson, happy 71st to you. Jenny Eastfold from Helena, Montana, is 61. Happy birthday to Diane Johnson from Cohasset and Beth Elke from Pupaski. Happy birthday to you.
Marshall, if you're listening, Marshall and Jody, the 40th anniversary is ruby. Not a metal, although the gemstone ruby can be incorporated into gifts made of various metals. The ruby symbolizes a vibrant, lasting love similar to an inner flame that remains strong and thriving after 40 years.
Oh, hey, coming up in about an hour, John, someone asked to get an update on your new dog. So let's talk about Henry in about an hour from
okay.
now. Okay.
Sounds good.
We're going to listen now to our music from, it's our album of the week. It is Ketch Secor is his name. Story the Crow Told Me is the name of the album. It's the first solo album for the Old Crow Medicine Show founder.
Mm.
Lots of guests on here like Marty Stewart and Molly Tuttle. The album is storytelling of Secor's beginnings as a busker on the streets through the early days of Old Crow Medicine Show. We're going to listen now to Old Man River. Our album of the week by Ketch Secor.
Last night was a hell of a night. I stepped in and broke up the fight. All of them boys went and scattered which way. Then I went down to the river to pray. Me and the old man river. Me and the old man river. Me and the old man river gonna figure it out. Firing off a cannon by the OK Mar. Rather hang this target right over my heart. Sick of this town, still living my dream. I went down to the river for to get myself clean. Me and the old man river. Me and the old man river. Me and the old man river gonna figure it out. We can make it in the shade with a little bit of luck. If the hippies and the rednecks keep showing up. But it gets hard to paddle, fighting upstream. A hell of a night. I wonder if we'll ever make it out alive. Cause if we do, there'll be some thanks I owe. I'm going down to the river to save my soul. Me and the old man river. Me and the old man river. Me and the old man river. We can figure it out. Me and the old man river.
You can hear Old Crow in that.
Yeah. That's probably going out to Old Man River listening right now. That's your theme song, Catch C-Core, Story the Crow Told Me. It's our album of the week. You can find more information at KAXE.org. Coming up, we'll have our Daily Dose of Nature with John Latimer, and then it's your time to call in and join us. You can text in right now if you want to, and I'll give you a call. Make a reservation.
We've had such success, like quick calls.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, it's wonderful.
218-326-1234 when you hear the What's for Breakfast music. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll bring you, as always, the sports page. We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward. Seeing some cloudy skies, some rain around the region, and we also want to remind you, we'd love to hear have you weigh in on your favorite books to read when you were a child. Did you ever read Where the Red Fern Grows?
No.
We heard from some people yesterday. That's one that you should not read.
I should not read?
No, because it's about a dog, and it is a sad ending, and I just remember...
Oh, boy.
We read it in grade school, and then they showed us the movie, and all of the boys were crying.
Well, I want to tell you about crying. I've been painting this house up in Marcel, a very large, beautiful house, and I was just getting done. Now, it's a lot of work, and I'm painting the garage door. So I'm painting the bottom of it. I'm sitting on my butt, and I have a roller, and I look over in my roller container, you know, where you put the paint in. There was a monarch butterfly in there thrashing.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Time stopped. I panicked. It was actually beautiful because it was a green paint. But I didn't know what to do, so I grabbed it, and I ran, and I got water bottles, and I poured. But his wings were closed, all right? So all the paint's inside the wings and on the wings. So I put water on it, and I was just doing everything drastic. Paper towels, just light dabbing. And an hour later, he was still... flopping around, but he didn't make it. That was very sad. That was like losing a dog or something, to see a beautiful monarch butterfly who we cherish around here, and they're in smaller supply, and he landed in my paint can. It was horrific. I don't know why I shared that, but it's horrific. So it was a sad ending to a long paint job.
And here we go. That kind of lines up with our nature note from Latimer today.
Really?
On today's date, August 29, 2011, I spot a morning cloak butterfly, and it looks magnificent. This is an emerging butterfly of the fall. It has spent the summer as first an egg and then a caterpillar, and then it metamorphosed into this lovely dark brown, nearly black butterfly with the cream-colored border and blue dots on the back wing if you get close enough to see them. But the morning cloak is interesting for another reason. This particular butterfly is going to find a spot, maybe a pile of lumber behind your house, maybe some crevice in your garage, maybe a crack in a tree. But that butterfly is going to crawl into that hiding place and spend the winter, and it will freeze solid. But it does so in a way that is referred to as supercooling. And if it does it over a long and slow period, the freezing of its body won't injure the tissue, and the thing will emerge in spring, usually in late March or early April on a very nice warm spring day. You'll see this same morning cloak butterfly crawl out of its hiding spot and begin to fly about. So in the fall, appreciate their beauty and understand that they have but a brief period to eat and gain some nourishment in order to basically freeze to death until next spring.
It don't matter if you're tall, it don't matter if you're small, it don't matter if you're blue or green or any shape at all, 'cause I'll be yours and you'll be mine to last, and we'll be friends holding fast. You don't have to be smart, you don't have to play a part. What better thing could ever be than a kindly heart? And I'll have yours, and you have mine too. Last, we'll be friends, holding fast. Talk all day, I'll listen. There's nothing we'll be missing. We don't need to paint the world, everything will glisten. What friends can be. We'll be light as balloons, cows jumping over the moon.
It is time for What's for Breakfast on the Friday Morning Show, where we pull up a chair to one of our members' kitchen tables. We get to know them a little bit better. We are talking with Edith. I didn't get your last name or where you're calling from this morning, Edith.
Edith Michael Sherry's Arm.
All right.
Sherry's Arm.
There we go. Okay, have you had your breakfast?
But I'm going to very soon.
And?
Oh, it's just going to be black coffee. I do intermittent fasting.
Oh.
So I won't eat any actual food till lunchtime.
So when's the last time you ate food?
Last night for dinner.
Okay.
So like 6 o'clock or something, or?
No, 8 or 9.
So tell us the rhythm of this. How does it work?
I like to go 12 to 16 hours without eating, and it seems to, you know, make my digestion better.
Oh.
Come on, what's for breakfast?
So,
Vuka just walked in, and he says, what's going on? And I said, I'm on what's for breakfast.
So Edith, then are you really hungry when it's time to eat, or you just settled in?
Oh, no.
No?
No. I gotta turn the radio off.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How long have you been doing this intermittent fasting?
About 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. So it is.
Well, about the same time I started my plant-based diet.
Okay. Does that mean vegan or is that different?
No, that's vegan. That's
okay.
You know, no meat, no eggs, no cow tit secretions.
No, what was that last word?
No cow tit secretions.
Oh.
No cow tit secretion. That is a first on KXC. I have never heard that phrase before.
If that isn't
that's going on a shirt.
That is a band name. Boy, I like this.
Wow. Well, you know, the feds don't give us any money anymore, so right. We can say what we want, right?
So, is Buka also on this way of eating?
Oh, heavens, no.
Well, how does that work?
He will eat, when I cook once or twice a week, maybe. You know, the kids are grown and out of the house. I don't have to do that anymore. But when I cook, he'll eat my food for 1 or 2 days, and then he won't.
So what might be a meal you would have today or tonight that's vegan?
Well, I made a really good eggplant casserole. It's kind of like an eggplant parmesan. The plant-based cheeses have really improved the last few years.
Okay. Wow.
They're made from nuts.
Okay. Nut cheese.
What?
They're nut cheese, John.
Nut cheese, yeah.
These are good words.
We're both writing these down.
Yeah.
Okay. Nut cheese and cow tit secretion.
You are a specific person, so there's got to be a story to the coffee that you're drinking.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, you want to hear about the coffee?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, strong and black.
Okay, that's right, because no... No milk or cream of any kind.
I could have oat milk in my coffee. Oat milk is delicious.
Okay.
But I just like really strong black coffee. I just got in that habit years ago when the kids were little, going to school and getting up and getting them already. And, by the way, your what you were saying about buying the school supplies, oh, my gosh. That was quite something back in the day.
Oh, my gosh. I'm still not over it. It happened yesterday.
I used to enjoy asking the teachers every year what they needed, like what their wish list was, and going out and buying that a few weeks into the school year, because they're always short on something. And I imagine it's even worse now than it was back then.
Oh, yeah. So when you think back, when you were in school, did you have to buy all this stuff that it's demanded of them now?
I was in school like 65 years ago.
That's right. That's right. It was the year they invented a pencil.
Yes, we invented the pencil. Before that, we were just taking bricks of charcoal and writing with it.
With, well, I don't remember ever. I just remember buying clothes. I don't think we ever had. Did we have to buy supplies?
Well, Don, maybe your wife was doing that chore.
That's true. That's true.
No, I remember, I mean, when I was growing up getting folders, I would get this Trapper Keeper thing that would, you know, and pencils, pencil box, some stuff like that, glue.
But you didn't have to get Kleenex and moisturizers and clean.
I didn't even grow up with Kleenex. For some reason, my mom didn't like Kleenex. It was just toilet paper in our house.
Oh, boy.
It's fairly wasteful product, really.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so
I'm still not convinced with your answer of coffee. Everything else is very strict. Does it have a brand name? Is it made out of birch bark, or is it, what is it?
I like real coffee, and I'm not stuck on any one brand, but I want it to be the fair trade coffee, whatever I buy.
Okay,
and it has to be the dark French roast.
Okay,
all right.
I don't want any wimpy, you know, amaretto flavored coffee anything.
Yeah.
Oh, hazelnut. Hazelnut coffee. I worked in a place once. It was actually our family business. My sister always brought a thermos of hazelnut coffee. Uh-huh. It makes me, I cannot stand the smell of that. But anyway,
I feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. So Edith, I'm so glad that you called today, because you and Booka have been at our festivals and we're getting ready for it. It's a week from Saturday. How would you describe what the festivals are like?
I just love how you have added more and more food trucks that have the kind of food that I can eat.
Mm. That's great.
That's just personal opinion. And we're both music lovers, and of course, Booka's had a very long career in music. But what I really, really enjoyed this week was Wednesday night, celebrating the 100-year anniversary of the golf course at the Kegama Golf Course. And John, I thought your slideshow was so awesome.
No, thank you.
I
want to ask you if John Latimer has seen that slideshow, because Booka and I think we saw one, if not both, of his parents in some of those pictures. And
so, yeah.
The music.
Oh, wasn't that something?
The ladies and the string quartet, and when they played Summer by Vivaldi from the Four Seasons, and I watched the slideshow during that particular song, and it went so perfectly. I couldn't even believe it, like they planned it or something.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming, and thank you for listening. The music was absolutely incredible, breathtaking. It was just total silence by the audience. Even young people were just like enthralled by it.
And I don't think you have anything to be ashamed of the size of the crowd, because I counted 30 to 40 people there, and everybody was enwrapped with it.
And back to those photos, Edith, I spent a lot of time at the Historical Society, a lot of time getting those photos. But every time I would come upon one of John Latimer's dad, I would take a little picture of it and send it to him. So John's been well versed in this stuff. John does not have the golf chops as his dad used to have.
Or his mom. Oh, my God. His mom was like, she was some golf pro. I mean, seriously. She won tournaments hand over fist almost year after year.
Yeah. They were a good golfing combination there.
So, Edith, you and Booka have been longtime supporters. Why do you support KXE? Why do you listen?
Well, you got to fight fascism however you can.
There's another T-shirt. Oh, my gosh.
You got three T-shirts.
I love it. Okay, so Edith, for being on What's for Breakfast, there is a parting gift.
Yeah, Homestead. Uh-oh.